Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
You are about to enter the arena of real news and factual commentary on The Voice of Reason here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Now, here is your host for today's program, Ed Golly.
Trump selling Bibles? Isn't that a little like Chris Christie becoming the national spokesman for Weight Watchers International? Are you kidding me? Ed Golly, along with Gary Gibbons on The Voice of Reason. And Gary, I saw an ad on TV where some company is soliciting funds to purchase Bibles to send over to some impoverished country in Africa. They can do it for $5 a copy. Now, that means they buy the Bible, they can ship it, they can distribute it, and pay for the advertising for less than $5 a copy. Trump's burning us 60 balloons for a copy. What markup is that? Like,
well, theirs probably doesn't have the Declaration of Independence in it, and the Pledge of Allegiance. Yeah. You know, everybody needs that in their Bible.
I wonder if the Constitution that he includes in the Bible has strike-throughs for all the parts that he wants to suspend. Yeah. Do you think, you know, just so we know where he's going with all this?
Yeah, and I wonder if the parts about adultery and treacherous behavior, all those things that are prescribed in the Bible, that those don't seem to have any effect on him.
I think Maureen Dowd may have expressed it best. She says, Donald Trump is presenting himself as the man on the cross, tortured for our sins. He tells crowds, I consider it a great badge of courage. I am being indicted for you. Instead of Christ-like redemption, he promises Lucifer-like retribution if resurrected. In reality, she says, Trump is a miserable human who cheated on his wives, cheats at golf, cheats at politics, incites violence, targets judges and their families, and looked on, pleased, as thugs threatened to hang his actually pious vice president. Yet more and more Trump is wallowing in his Messiah complex. 2 Corinthians, Trump wouldn't know the difference between the Old and the New Testaments. And weaponizing his martyrdom, Trump is selling $60 God Bless the USA Bibles, adorned with the flag and the Constitution, and as you pointed out, the Declaration of Independence and the Pledge of Allegiance, which is actually a prayer of allegiance now. And what next? Let me guess, a personally signed copy of Mein Kampf for $499? I mean, would you
be
surprised?
If you act now, we'll throw that in.
How about maybe we'll start seeing Donald Trump marriage counseling centers pop up around the country? Anything's possible with this huckster. David Axelrod said that even as a secular Jew, he's offended. He says, quote, this is a guy who has violated 11 of the 10 commandments. Jeez, are you kidding me? You know, religious snake oil salesman have a storied history in American literature and films, but it's shocking when the charlatan might actually end up in the Oval Office, isn't it?
Yeah.
An issue that should command attention of Trump supporters and something that the conservatives never want you to know about is the number of the most prominent figures from Trump's 2017 to 2021 administration who are outright refusing to endorse him. And several have said they are actively working against his reelection. Newsweek compiled a list of some of the most notable figures, not all of them, just the most notables, from the Republicans' first term in office who are refusing to support his 2024 presidential bid. Probably the most prominent is Mike Pence, who served as Trump's vice president and said he could not back him for a second presidential term, quote, in good conscience, unquote. Not a single cabinet member or administration official of the Clinton, Obama, Biden, or even Carter presidencies ever announced their refusal to support those presidents for reelection.
Yeah, and another one was Melania's chief of staff, Stephanie Grisham, speaking to CNN, Jake Tapper in October of 2021, Grisham was asked if she voted for Trump in the November 2020 presidential election. She replied, "I did not," said that she wrote in a different candidate who she would not name. And between June 2020 and January 2021, Sarah Matthews, who worked in Trump's White House as his deputy press secretary, she's since become a critic of her former boss when she claimed that he had a history of making unhinged comments during a recent interview with MSNBC's Jen Psaki. During the same discussion, Matthews also said that Trump, quote, helped incite a deadly insurrection of our nation's capital, close quote, with reference to the January 6th Capitol riot.
Jim Mattis, a retired four-star general named Mad Dog, served as Secretary of Defense from January 2017 to January 2019. And in a statement provided to Politico following the January 6th attack on the Capitol, Mattis said Trump, quote, will deservedly be left a man without a country, unquote. Referring to the then President, Madison added, his use of the presidency to destroy trust in our election and to poison our respect for fellow citizens has been enabled by a pseudo-political leaders whose names will live in infamy as profiles in cowardice.
Remember Anthony Scaramucci?
Oh, the Mooch.
Yeah, he was the White House Director of Communications for just 10 days.
just long enough to get a pension, I bet.
But he had seen enough, right? Yeah. During CNN, an appearance in January, he said he would 100% be voting for Biden in November as he views Trump as a threat to American democracy. Referring to the Republican nominee, Scaramucci added, quote, this really is going to be a battle for the democracy, this one. He's going to expand executive power. He's going to make things rougher for people. He's already said he's going after his adversaries using the Department of Justice. When someone's telling you they're going to flex and be a dictator on day one and go after their adversaries, this is against the 200-plus-year experiment of America.
Between July 2017 and January 2019, John Kelly, a former Marine Corps general, served as Trump's White House chief of staff. So I guess he was succeeded by Meadows in 2019. Speaking to CNN in October of 2023, Kelly described Trump as, quote, a person that has no idea what America stands for and has no idea what America is all about. A person who admires autocrats and murderous dictators. A person that has nothing but contempt for our democratic institutions, our Constitution, and the rule of law, unquote. Asked about the prospect of a second Trump White House term, Kelly added, quote, God help us, unquote.
How about former Attorney General Bill Barr, the guy who's been, you know, fixing things for the Republicans for decades?
The most corrupt Attorney General since John Mitchell spent 19 months in federal prison for his involvement in the Watergate scandal.
Well, Barr has called Trump a consummate narcissist, a petty man who will always put his interests above the country's. And it's clear that that's what the case is. Everything is always about him. And Barr was saying, you know, I've seen him in interviews about the documents case, the highly classified documents that Trump kept in his bathroom. Barr says that, you know, that he is dead to right on that case. He has no defense to it, other than the fact that he has a judge who's helping him delay it.
Wow. Mark Milley served as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff between October 2019 and September 2023, and during his retirement speech, Milley said Trump was a, quote, wannabe dictator, unquote, and added, we don't take an oath to an individual. We take an oath to the Constitution, and we take an oath to the idea that is America, and we're willing to die to protect it. You know, that's the same thing with James Comey, who was the head of the FBI, when Trump called him in, sat down with him over a private dinner and said, I want you to profess loyalty to me. And Comey said, that's not how it works, you dumb banana. and he got fired. Trump then proclaimed that he was a crooked cop and he was a bad cop, but he never, ever offered any suggestion of anything that Comey did that was corrupt or dishonest in office.
Yeah,
never.
No, he just failed the loyalty test.
Exactly.
There's between April and December of 2020, Alyssa Farah Griffin, who worked as the White House Director of Strategic Communications and an assistant to the president. During an appearance on ABC's The View, which she co-hosts, Griffin said that she teared up when she saw that Pence had refused to endorse Trump for a second term. Addressing her co-host, Griffin added, quote, "The reason I cannot in good conscience endorse Donald Trump this year also has to do with the fact that he is walking away, not just from keeping the faith with the Constitution on that day, but also with a commitment to fiscal responsibility, a commitment to the sanctity of life, a commitment to the American leadership of the world."
How about John Bolton? We all remember him, a prominent foreign policy hawk who served as U.S. National Security Advisor from April 2018 till September 2019. 2019 was about the time they were all jumping ship,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yep.
Because they realized, and we haven't even talked about the Secretary of State, who had been the CEO of Exxon Mobil, which is one of the largest corporations in the world, who walked out of there talking to himself, declaring Trump an effing moron.
Yep.
Who was one of the few people that really was qualified through his experience and intellect to serve as Secretary of State. He couldn't do it. And, of course, a lot of these other people were qualified. They certainly were. Bolton, during an interview with MSNBC's Jen Psaki in February, Bolton said there will be, quote, "celebrations in the Kremlin," unquote, if Trump is elected in November, adding Putin thinks that he's an easy mark. And earlier last month, in a post on X, Bolton posted this: "Donald Trump wants Americans to treat him like North Koreans treat Kim Jong-un. Get ready." Cassidy Hutchinson.
Yeah, Cassidy Hutchinson, the former White House aide who worked as an assistant to the Chief of Staff Mark Meadows before she became a whistleblower, has claimed a second Trump term would threaten American democracy. Speaking to ABC News in December, Hutchinson said, "If Donald Trump is elected president again in 2024, I do fear that it will be the last election where we're voting for democracy, because if he is elected again, I don't think we'll be voting under the same Constitution." Think about that, folks.
I mean, these people know something because they were there.
They watched
first
him up
hand.
Close.
Yeah.
You know, he's already fallen asleep twice in court, right? And is in a criminal trial where his liberty is on the line. What do you think he does when he's at work?
Yeah.
You know, he stays up all night tweeting, and then, you know, he had personal time on his calendar every day because he wouldn't go into the quote-unquote Oval Office, you know, before 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it was called executive time. I mean, it's widely known he has an extremely short attention span, so yeah, he doesn't read anything.
No.
And even when experts are brought in to try to explain to him issues about the budget or international relations, he ends up talking to them about golf because he can't absorb what they're telling him when it becomes complex. And we saw that in the way he would deal with issues that were too complex for him to comprehend and deal with, whether it was climate change or the COVID issue. He just, you know, with one wave of the arm, declares it all a hoax or not an issue, and now you can go play golf. But the world's more complex than he's ever capable of understanding. And this, Gary, I think it's notable. There's only one Republican who is a former president, vice president, or candidate for either of those offices who has endorsed Donald Trump: the dotard Sarah Palin. There was a brilliant mind to lead us into that. I mean, she gave Dan Quayle a run for his money, didn't she, when it came to just being an utter dunce? Let's talk about...
What newspapers do you read, she was asked.
News magazines.
All of them.
Yeah. She couldn't name any of them. That's curious. Mark Esper served as U.S. Secretary of Defense between July 2019 and November 2020. And 2 years later, he was asked about whether he would vote for his former boss if he ran for the presidency again. Quote, "No, and I'll tell you why. Because in my view, any elected leader needs to meet some basic criteria. They need to be able to put country over self. They need to have a certain amount of integrity and principle. They need to be able to reach across the aisle and bring people together and unite the country. Look, Donald Trump doesn't meet those marks for me," unquote. Then he was asked by comedian Bill Maher on his HBO show if he would vote for the current president, Biden. And he responded by saying, "I'm not there yet. I'm definitely not voting for Trump, but I'm not there yet." He said, though, quote, "Every day that Trump does something crazy, the door to voting for Biden opens a little bit more." On the third anniversary of the assault on the Capitol, CNN's Jim Acosta interviewed Esper, who was clearly in a position to know what he was talking about.
"Since today is January 6th, 3 years after the attack on the Capitol, I'm just curious, Mr. Secretary, do you view Donald Trump as a threat to American democracy?"
"It is a tragic day in our nation's history. And yes, I do regard him as a threat to democracy. Democracy as we know it, our institutions, our political culture, all those things that make America great."
And remember, this isn't just one of the people in the Trump administration. It's one of many, practically everybody that was in his administration that's speaking out.
I think there were three or four cabinet members who resigned on January 6th because they saw what he had done. Yeah, and they were all saying, "No, this is too much."
And that was the reason Barr resigned.
Yep.
Right, over that issue. Yeah. And now I understand that yesterday on Fox Fake News he flip flopped, and now he's saying, "Oh, he will support the Republican nominee, even if it's Trump." And I think it's because he realizes that if Trump does get in power, he's going to start arresting all his enemies, and he considers Barr an enemy. Anybody who doesn't profess total loyalty to him, he's going to arrest him on anything, or sick the not the FBI, but the IRS on him. Tell him to go back and audit the last 10 years' tax returns in excruciating detail. That was Tricky Dick's tactic.
Sure, yeah.
And so he's probably figuring, "What am I sticking my neck out for? You know, I'll cover my tush."
It's too late, Bill. You've already failed the loyalty test, so yeah, you should stay on the right side.
Well, Gary, you are a semi-retired attorney,
mm-hmm.
and I want to pitch some questions to you about the Supreme Court and what they've been up to lately. I think that you would agree that they're really deliberately taking too much time to decide this presidential immunity issue, as if there's any logical argument whatsoever that could be advanced for that case. I mean, they decided Bush v. Gore in a week, didn't they?
Well, yeah, and Jack Smith asked them on December the 12th to please take that case up and rule on it, and they didn't do that. Jack Smith had asked them to skip over the D.C. Court of Appeals and just take it now, and let's put this to bed. And they didn't, so it went to the D.C. Court of Appeals, and they ruled. You know, famously, remember one of the judges on the panel said, "So you're saying that the president could order SEAL Team 6 to kill mm-hmm. someone, and that would be fine?" And so they didn't take it up then. And then Trump appealed that decision, and instead of quickly ruling on it or setting a hearing anytime soon, they waited like 7 weeks to even set it for hearing, for oral argument, and then won't issue an opinion probably until the very last day of this term, all of which is a cloud hanging over all of these criminal cases because the people are waiting to hear what they're yeah. going to say on this issue. And it's clear that they're just buying time.
Now, unlike a conventional civil court, is it true that they are required to issue decisions on all the cases that they've heard through the session by by the end
That's
of
what
that.
They've always done.
But if they don't, who disciplines them?
Nobody.
Right?
Nobody.
So there's nothing written in the Constitution that mandates that,
mandates
they do that.
When just, they have to rule.
Wow.
Yeah.
Seems to me their logic has been a little contradictory lately. So, for example, they overturned the Colorado decision, the Supreme Court of that state, to remove Trump from the ballot because he violated the 14th Amendment. And their logic was they were concerned about the potential consequences of following what's clearly written in the Constitution. What could states do in the future with respect to candidates that they would put on their ballots? But when they overturned Roe with the Dobbs decision, they gave no consideration whatsoever to the consequences that that would generate, which are literally threatening women's lives in some of these red states.
Yeah, and this court has really cherry-picked the decisions that they want to weigh in on as what they call an originalist, which is looking for words in the Constitution. If they're not there, then sorry, you're out of luck. Versus, their ideological stance on an issue, they're happy to take that up. It's confounding, how inconsistent they're being. And remember that the three that were appointed during the Trump administration all got up and swore that Roe was established super precedent and, would not be dealt with, not be overturned.
Not even subject to consideration for overturning.
Right? It's precedent.
Yeah.
And we follow precedent, until we don't.
Yeah, exactly. So they were running a game on us, and that's why they were appointed, and they knew that from the get-go. They claimed that the issue of abortion is nowhere addressed or spelled out anywhere in the Constitution. Therefore, no woman has a constitutional right to determine her own reproductive decisions. But haven't they really made a lot of decisions over the years based on the advancement of liberty and civil rights that were, again, not specifically spelled out in the Constitution?
Sure.
For example, the right to a quality education in any school in this country by including minorities was addressed in the Brown versus Board of Education.
Right.
But that doesn't have any...
Miranda warnings when someone's arrested are not, that's not in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. That came out of a court decision saying, you need to be told that anything you say can be used against you, for example.
Same-sex marriage isn't defined anywhere in the Constitution, and yet the court agreed that that's a civil liberty that should apply to every American in every state.
Right.
They didn't say, if you're a red state or a medievalist state, you can oppress people in your state. But now they're saying, but it's okay with respect to women's health. Now, interracial marriage is not addressed. But clearly, Clarence Thomas has no problem with that.
It's the only one of those rights that he hasn't mentioned in one of his decisions that are on the table
and
for
I
discussion.
Think one of the most alarming is... contraception and going back to that Comstock Act, where we see the Supreme Court could actually reach back to that law and use it to oppress Americans' accessibility to contraceptions.
Yeah, and look at Arizona. That law was passed before Arizona became a state. Before women had the right to vote, and it has completely outlawed abortion health care in Arizona, and they have now had two opportunities in the last week for the legislature in Arizona to overturn that, and they've said, nope, we like it that way. The patriarchy is in full display in this country right now.
Now let's talk about the judge that's overseeing Trump's classified documents case, who has pretty much crossed the line and keeps finding ways to delay that trial, which includes 40 felony counts brought by special counsel Jack Smith. This guy, Harry Littman, who writes for the Los Angeles Times, says her latest ruling is completely loony, where she takes seriously Trump's nonsensical argument that by merely placing presidential records in boxes and shipping them to Mar-a-Lago, he reclassified them as personal effects. The Presidential Records Act, which he's using for his defense but not being charged with at all, right? It clearly states that any records created during a term, classified or not, belong to the government. That means if he gets a memo announcing his tea time for the next day, he can't just tear it up and throw it away. That becomes the government property, right?
It's even more fundamental than that. The statute, the Presidential Records Act, is a civil statute. It is not a criminal, is not a defense to a criminal charge. She has completely missed the boat on even considering the fact that the Presidential Records Act might be a defense in his case. Mm-hmm. Now, Harry Littman is not, he writes for the Los Angeles Times because he was an ex-federal prosecutor for like 25 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's astounding that he has not been brought on charges on that case alone, because that one he would not qualify for a security clearance at all in this country but for, you know, being elected as president, because the debt that he's run up, the people that he's trying to get money from, God knows where, throughout the world, those are all national security threats that somebody in his, and he's also already shown that he has no respect for keeping our secrets, our national secrets. So, when are we going to wake up and say, yeah, this is just completely crazy?
And the same thing applied to his son-in-law, Kushner, when he came into the White House as an advisor. The State Department kept insisting that, no, he doesn't qualify for a lot of the same reason. Trump just said, no, I want him to have a full clearance.
And the president can do that.
Yeah.
Frighteningly, yes.
Now, Gary, let's talk about the hush money case, the one that's being tried now. I believe it's 34 felony accounts. This is not a civil case.
Right.
Astonishingly, only one in three Americans think Trump acted illegally in that case. My contention is because they simply don't understand it. They think that the case revolves around the singular issue of him paying off the hooker not to sing,
right,
as he approached the election. Right after the Access Hollywood video came out, and he thought, man, if that's stacked on top of that, I'm toast. Because my base is evangelical Americans, right?
Yeah. So first of all, every time Trump opens his mouth, he says, this is all Biden. He's coming after me, the Justice Department. Okay, first of all, that's completely false. This is a New York state prosecution under New York law that was brought by a New York grand jury of individual New York residents who were applying the law that says that you can't falsify business records. And that's what this is. All those 34 counts are 34 falsified business records that he had, submitted a fake invoice for legal fees, quote, air quotes around legal fees, for Michael Cohen, and then wrote a check and said it was to pay legal fees when it was just to pay the hush money. Each one of those documents that he falsified is a separate count in that indictment, and they found that violated the New York law. And what they're trying to prove is that it was done to affect the outcome of the election. because it was all done within, right after the Access Hollywood tape came out, when Trump was on the ropes and people were saying, well, wait a minute, you know, is this guy really presidential material? And if it had come out that he had, you know, slept with all these, you know, the porn star and the Playboy, you know, playmate and all that, you know, people might have said, I don't know. And he's lying again by saying that he did this to keep it from Melania.
Who was routinely poring over the books of the Trump Corporation.
Right, exactly.
And
at one point he even said, well, maybe we can wait and see what happens in the election before we pay, because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to have to pay and waste the money if we don't win the election, you know. So it clearly wasn't to keep Melania in the dark. Yeah.
And the Bibles that Trump is selling, isn't there some reference to adultery in that Bible and the punishment?
It's one of the top 10, right?
It's a capital crime.
Yeah.
Both the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death.
Yeah.
I sure hope he subscribes to the tenets of the Bible he's selling. Well, it's Ed Golly with Gary Gibbons on The Voice of Reason. We're going to take a quick time out for some important messages, and we will then continue with more of the issues that conservatives never want you to hear about.
Hi there, I'm Robin Savage, stand-up comic. Are you sick of the news getting pushed around by two sides, always saying the other side is wrong? You deserve to enjoy the news.
That's what's up, Robin. I'm your host, Mac James, from Stand Up For News. We're stand-up comics, and we tell the news. The news doesn't have any legs and can't stand up for its own self. Join us and special guests like local hero comics like Donnie Stopa, all the way to legends like Tommy Chong, every Thursday, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., here on WTAN Radio.
You're listening to The Voice of Reason on the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Arborlife Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing, to grinding and removal, you get an experienced ISA certified and veteran owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arborlife Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arborlife Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's TAN Talk Radio Network.
Especially if you're a conservative getting your news from Fox or OANN. They're not going to tell you the whole story, are they? If you'd like to talk to us, you can reach us by email at WTANvoice@AOL.com. It's simply all one word, WTANvoice@AOL.com. We'd love to hear from you. Time for Poll Watch, where we take a look at some of the figures that are representing our society today. Gary, did you know that 7% of Americans now own an electric vehicle? And that's up from only 4%. Last year, improbably 44% say they're currently considering buying one or might consider it in the future. And I think a lot more would if they understood more about how they work and how advanced the technology is and how low the maintenance is and how you never need to worry about oil dripping all over your driveway or whatever. As a matter of fact, I was out with some friends last night that just said they ordered a Rivian.
Yeah.
So they're ready to go. In states where abortion is prohibited, 21% of women of reproductive age say they know someone who has faced difficulties in getting an abortion since Roe was overturned. That's one out of five women of reproductive age. 74% of women say abortion should be legal in all or most cases. That's a little bit different than what Mr. Trump said about it. He's long argued that the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe gave those who oppose abortion rights what he calls tremendous power to negotiate. Leverage he said he wanted to use to strike a deal that he hoped would make both sides happy. and bring the country together, even though the issue is one of the most contentious in American politics, with some opponents viewing abortion as murder and proponents seeing it as a fundamental women's right. Well, Trump is now backpedaling on his position now that it's becoming evident to him that the consequences have been politically disastrous for the GOP, as well as medically catastrophic for women in red states. Let's hear how he's attempting to qualify his actions.
All right. My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people. You must follow your heart or, in many cases, your religion or your faith.
That's a testimony to having a good engineer who's alert and realize I was calling for the wrong voice clip. Thanks, Big Ed. But Gary, is he right? Did everybody want the abortion issue to be where it is now from a legal standpoint? Obviously, three of the Supreme Court justices didn't.
No, and it's polling, like you said, off the charts that people are waking up and saying, you know, like, don't take rights away from us. This has been something that women have, frankly, taken for granted for 50 years, that, you know, we have autonomy over our health care, and all of a sudden, one day later, they don't. It's really disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's demonstrating that he's clearly out of touch with the will of the people, the majority of the people. I mean, any time a politician makes a blanket statement and said, this is what the American people want, it tells you, no, there's always a diversity of opinion on any issue.
Yeah, and he was asked by a reporter as he was walking, what's your position now? And he said, we'll be issuing a statement later. You know, he has no independent thought on anything. He has to go and calculate how this is going to be best received by, his base or whatever. So,
and yet it seems he probably doesn't regret the justices that he put on the court, or I should say that Leonard Leo put on the court.
He brags about it. He said, I did this. I'm responsible for Roe v. Wade being overturned. You know, how's that working out for you, like, politically?
The cartoon I saw the other day of the two big Republican elephants standing in front of a mob of women protesting, and one of them says, well, maybe we made a mistake in taking away women's rights, and the other one says, before we took away their right to vote. Which, what are we going to do, put that back into the states?
That's what they'd like to have the law be like it was 160 years ago.
I'm afraid you're right. And do you think it's going to hurt him in the election? Do you think
absolutely.
You think, as I understand it, it's the suburban women that are going to be most upset about it. But why wouldn't all women be upset about
it? Men should be upset about it, too. Mm-hmm. If you have daughters, you have, grandchildren that need to have autonomy over their health care. And that's what this really is.
What about Robert F. Kennedy Jr.? I understand he's pulling maybe 20% of the poll votes.
Well,
for presidency, do you think he could be a
factor? When's the last time polls were right? You know,
were when Billary won. They said she was going to win. She won the popular election. They just didn't realize that he could draw to an inside straight and win the Electoral College.
The problem with Robert Kennedy Jr. is that he could be a spoiler in the election. I think he'll take he's more apt to take votes away from Biden than he is to take him away from Trump. He sounds like, Trump light to me.
Yeah.
And but his biggest problem is he's not able to get on the ballot in all the states. And so it's going to be interesting to see which states he can actually qualify to get on the ballot on. And then you know, will that have any kind of effect on the outcome of the election? You know, if people are really looking for an alternative, you know, then it's throwing your vote away if he's only on the ballot in seven states. You know,
yeah.
There's no way you can win.
Do you perceive the border issue as being equal or greater than the abortion issue, as far as the election is concerned, steering more voters to vote for Trump because they want what they perceive will be a completely secure border, as well as maybe 3 million illegal aliens deported?
It's hard to say. If people are really paying attention to what happened, the border could be fixed by now, because there was a bill that
the Border Security Act, wasn't it?
The Republicans had gotten everything they wanted, and Trump said no, don't approve this in the House. So the Senate was ready to go, and it had all been done by the Republicans. The senator from Oklahoma had led the charge on that, and so I don't know how they can, with a straight face, say that they are the ones that are going to fix the border when they broke it.
Yeah,
they've broken it this year
to make it a political issue. About 3.8 million illegal immigrants have been deported just during the Biden administration. That's hardly my concept of an open border.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it is.
What I have read is that, you know, when Trump was actually in office, Stephen Miller was put in charge of that issue, and he is, of course, white nationalist who doesn't want anybody to come into the country other than, you know, people that look just like him. And so they changed the form for legal immigration to, and these are the things that people don't see what's going on in the government, but they could administratively say that in order to fill out the form for legal immigration, not somebody who shows up at the border, but somebody who's trying to do it, quote unquote, the right way, they passed a rule that said every line on the form has to be filled out. And if it's not, for example, you had to list your children's names, and there were five lines. And if you put, you had two children, and you just put their two names on there, and you left the other three blank and didn't put NA, not applicable, on those lines, your application got thrown out. Mm-hmm. So they didn't even want the people to come in, quote unquote, the right way. So that's what you talk about, the difference between democracy and not having one. The people inside the government can really tear things apart that we've had for more than 200 years, and that's a problem.
Inflation will be a conservative issue, blaming it all on Biden, and yet I've heard economic experts come right on this station and say, no, inflation can't be tied. It cannot be tied to Biden in any way. It happened because of the pandemic, because of the interruption of the supply chain.
It happened because of corporate greed. Look at the profits of the oil companies, mm-hmm. the grocery stores. Their profits are off the charts.
Which is why the admonition that simply drilling more oil will resolve the issue of inflation. We're already producing more than we ever have in history. We're exporting oil. But somehow, if we put in this Keystone pipeline, then the inflation will be back down to 1% or something. No, it won't, because the corporations want to keep oil prices high because they're making
more
money than they know what to do with.
High.
And, you know, as far as government spending, think about it. Let me take you back to, 2001, after the terrorist attacks, and Baby Bush was the president, and one of his first acts was to implement a tax cut for the rich at the same time that he started the two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which ended up costing $3 trillion and generated the beginning of this $35 trillion debt we're sitting on. Now, why didn't that trigger inflation? We didn't have inflation during that war.
All right.
With an extra $3 trillion being spent, right? So if this government spending triggers inflation, what happened? Where was it? We had lower revenues and higher spending. And it's the first time in history that any president or administration cut taxes when starting a war or going into a war. First time we ever did it.
And they didn't account for it on the books.
So it wasn't until Obama was in that
it was all supplementals.
And putting tariffs on Chinese imports, that isn't going to cure inflation. That's going to add to it because the consumer pays the tariff, not the supplier.
Right. I did see where Biden is talking about raising the tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum to protect the U.S. interests in doing that, because we are now once again manufacturing steel and aluminum at record paces here.
Yeah.
And he wants to protect that.
Oh, and did you see where there was a motion to change Dulles International Airport's name to Trump International Airport in Congress. Some congressman proposed this idea, and it caused us to wonder why not something more reflective of Trump's character and the fact that he's been charged with those 91 felony counts. So how about the Leavenworth, Kansas Donald Trump Federal Correction Facility? That'd be appropriate. I think that'd be nice. You know, let's remember who this guy is. You know, Trump assesses or asserts, I should say, that Biden is becoming cognitively impaired. But did you hear what Trump said about the Battle of Gettysburg last weekend?
Biden was saved by the immortal heroes at Gettysburg. Gettysburg, what an unbelievable battle that was, the Battle of Gettysburg. What an unbelievable, I mean, it was so much and so interesting and so vicious and horrible and so beautiful in so many different ways. It represented such a big portion of the success of this country. Gettysburg, wow. I go to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania to look and to watch. And the statement of Robert E. Lee, who's no longer in favor, did you ever notice that? No longer in favor. Never fight uphill, me boys. Never fight uphill. They were fighting uphill. He said, wow, that was a big mistake. He lost his great general. And they were fighting. Never fight uphill, me boys. But it was too late.
I'm still not sure what general he lost. None of his generals disappeared or shot or fired after that conflict. But
they say that repeating things over and over is a sign of cognitive dissonance.
Well, the problem with this account is that General Lee did not talk like Jose Gaspar or the Lucky Charms leprechaun, right? And he never issued this command at the Battle of Gettysburg to never fight uphill, nor did he ever issue any downslope-only orders. In fact, fighting uphill could actually succeed because troops often shot too high. And that may be reason why several months later, Union forces won the Battle of Missionary Ridge after soldiers charged uphill to overtake the Confederates.
Let's not lose sight of the fact that the Civil War was Americans fighting against Americans. And only Donald Trump would think that that's a beautiful thing. I've been to Gettysburg. And I took an extensive tour, and there was, at the end of that battle, there were wagon trains leaving town that were end to end, and it took 48 hours of the horse-drawn wagons to remove all of the bodies. The
casualties, yeah.
What's beautiful about that, Donald?
It is amazing that he would characterize it that way. And, you know, another mischaracterization I hear so often is people in government say that there hasn't been an assault on the Capitol since that conflict, the Civil War. But the fact is that the Confederacy was not trying to take over the whole Union. They were just trying to form their own country. So they were defending themselves against the Union because Lincoln sort of took the same position Putin does with respect to Ukraine. He says, you know, I'm not going to let you go and be your own country. I'll kill every last one of you. And he used the Union troops like cannon fodder. You know how deadly war was because those weapons were more accurate and could hit targets at longer ranges.
And there was so much hand-to-hand combat in that war. It's so brutal. You know, the bayonets and the, you know, it's just...
The grape shot instead of...
Horrific war.
But Trump... It depicts Lee as some kind of a great general betrayed by his stupid troops, and listening to his account, you'd never know that he gave orders for the campaign and the battle. He's the one that started it. And he said after Pickett's charge that it was all his fault, and in fact it was. He botched it. He essentially lost the war. It could be because he knew that if they tried to retreat, they were going to be faced with a river that was swollen. It'd be hard for them to get across it. But the better tactic would have been to find some high ground somewhere and retreat to that. But he just didn't do it, and he mucked it up, and that was the end of the Confederacy. We have just a couple minutes left, Gary. I wanted to talk about what our governor did last Thursday when he signed a bill that will prevent local governments from imposing wage requirements on contractors and requiring heat exposure protections for workers. And more than 90 organizations like the Farm Worker Association of Florida and the NAACP, Florida State Conference, signed on to letters to DeSantis opposing the bill and seeking a veto. Opponents said in their letter this, quote, Floridians feel it getting hotter and understand how difficult and dangerous it is to labor in the sun and the heat. Preempting local government's ability to protect workers from climate-caused extreme heat is inhumane and will have enormous negative economic impacts when lost productivity is taken into account. To me, it's like going back to the era of the steel mills that Carnegie had, where a workman had a 1 in 11 chance of literally falling asleep at the factory and dying when he fell into a smelter or something. And Carnegie didn't care. There was always another boatload of immigrants coming over and just hire one of them. And for all the labor of 12-hour days, 6 days a week, what were they rewarded with? The luxury of living in a slum all their lives and having no retirement or vacation or health care or anything.
Last year was the hottest year on record for the state of Florida.
Yeah.
Miami-Dade had a local ordinance that said, hey, every hour you should give somebody 10 minutes of break that are working outside so that they can have water and get in the shade. Because what happens when you go from heat exhaustion to heat stroke is that your internal organs actually start to fry themselves, and you're done in a matter of minutes, and it's an extremely dangerous situation, and yet our legislature says, nah, you know, suck it up.
Yeah, that's why we call it the freest state in the Union.
Yeah.
Because the governor's taken all our freedoms away from us. Well, Gary, our quote for today is from Stephen Wright, who said this, 99% of lawyers give the rest a bad name. Hope you'll join us again next Thursday for another edition of The Voice of Reason, along with Gary Gibbons, Ed Golly, reminding you, if the statement seems a little too implausible to be true, don't believe it just because a conservative said it.
Make them prove it.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
Listen.